Welcome back, John Bruton, Sinead O'Carroll, Jim Powers still with us, and so is Suzanne Lynch, Washington correspondent of the Irish Times. And Suzanne, I thought we'd have a little catch up about yes. Matters American. So you're based in Washington, obviously. Yeah. You were home covering the Pence visit.
That's right.
Last week. What were your thoughts on it?
Well, look, I think it started off all very well. And by the end of it, I think a lot of people were happy to see the back of Mike Pence. I mean, firstly, the timing proved interesting for the government because Mike Pence had originally supposed to be visiting London first and then coming to Ireland. And this was seen as a kind of a potential difficulty for Ireland because it was assumed that he would meet Boris Johnson. He would get the British side of things on Brexit and then come to Ireland. So when the timetable was changed and Mike Pence was coming first, there was kind of quiet smiles in Dublin because, you know, they could speak and brief Mike Pence on the Irish perspective on Brexit. But what actually happened was there were 2 days of visits, and on the first day he had a media event with Simon Coveney down in Shannon. And it was all very general, and he seemed to be quite on the Irish side, if you like, when it comes to Brexit. But something evidently happened in over 12 hours or so, because when he delivered his pre-scripted comments on Brexit alongside the Taoiseach,
delivered off an autocue.
He did. I was there. He was reading off an autocue, and he surprised pretty much everyone there by saying, you know, the EU and Ireland must negotiate, come to the table. He talked about the importance of protecting UK sovereignty. So this was not expected. And I think there's a lot of bad feeling that this had happened. Now, in saying that, and Lucinda Creighton makes this point exactly in her piece today in the Sunday Business Post, in one way, you know, we should not be surprised. The Trump administration is unabashedly pro-Brexit. Donald Trump, National Security Advisor John Bolton, they support Brexit. They think it's a good thing. It's in line with their rejection of the notion of multilateralism, the notion that countries should work together. So, in a sense, Mike Pence is kind of, you know, supporting that line. And also, really, to some extent, it doesn't really matter what Mike Pence thinks on this, because ultimately any trade deal between Britain and the United States has to go to Congress. And Nancy Pelosi has been unequivocal. She's the head person in the House of Representatives. I spoke to her myself for the Irish Times, and she was unequivocal about this, saying she will block a deal if it doesn't.
Even if this is a red line for Donald Trump, it just can't happen without
Congress. And I looked into
this,
and if you look back in 2008, there was a trade deal under negotiation between the US and Colombia, and Nancy Pelosi was also the House Speaker back then. She had a long career, and she blocked that. There were different concerns, obviously. There were concerns about human rights and labour standards. She used a kind of little-known clause in the legalities around trade to block that, and it was delayed. Now, it did eventually happen, but by many years later than they thought. Okay. So I think there's kind of a denial on the British side that Congress has such power over these trade deals, because a trade deal between Britain and the United States is one of the key, you know, talking points of Brexiteers. They, of course, want to leave the European Union, so they'll sign trade deals with other countries. But, of course, Donald Trump, as we know, is all talk on a lot of these issues.
And he says, can be a fickle friend.
Yes, he says, I want to sign a trade deal. But, of course, on his terms, look what happened with Denmark, look what happened with other countries. Once they say, well, actually, we want this from the relationship, he says, well, then, sorry, it's not happening.
Yeah, because he views a trade deal as something that he wins.
America,
it's a zero-sum game. And the more you get, the less we're getting, and that's not...
Yeah, and so the two issues that are difficult for Britain will be agriculture, kind of what we were talking about, and they've different standards on chicken and different meats. And secondly, America wants access to the NHS and other contracts to compete for, you know, UK government contracts. And this is a no-no for much of the British public. So that's a real difficulty.
Except that, as I understand it, the private contractors can go for NHS contracts and do all the time. And I'm not sure they have to be British. But anyway, the other aspect of the Pence visit that has this taken off as a serious issue in America, the notion that Pence stayed at Doomsday?
Yeah, it really has. Usually in America, there's quite a brief coverage, A, of Mike Pence's trips abroad, because he is only the vice president, and B, you know, to countries, you know, European countries, that's relatively uncontentious. This time it was different. There was a travelling pool of reporters who were speaking to there informally, and from the get-go, there was concern about why Mike Pence was staying at Doombeg, that's owned by Donald Trump, the hotel there. And we do need to remember, this is coming at a specific time, because in the last few weeks, Donald Trump got himself into hot water for suggesting that next year's G7 summit, which is due to take place in America, should take place in the Trump Hotel in Miami. So he's already...
Is this
already,
Mar-a-Lago that
No, it's not Mar-a-Lago. No. He's other properties in Florida.
Right.
So this was suggested. And of course, out of the entire United States. So there's already a lot of media scrutiny over this. There's an issue constantly, and there's been court cases about this that are ongoing. The Trump Hotel in Washington is just located a few blocks from the White House. And this is frequented, obviously, by a lot of Trump supporters, but also foreign dignitaries. Different countries send their officials to stay in that hotel. And other businesses, essentially, in Maryland and nearby states have taken cases against this, saying that Donald Trump is in breach of a... There's a clause in the US Constitution that prohibits presidents from taking gifts, it's called the Emoluments Clause, from other countries. So there's a lot of focus on this.
Is this another way of this Democratic obsession with, instead of focusing on beating Donald Trump in an election, this obsession with throwing all these arrows at him and none of them seem to do the job in the end?
Yeah, I mean, what's probably more interesting in this instance of Mike Pence is that there have been suggestions of tension between Donald Trump and Mike Pence. Obviously, there's been a huge churn of personnel in the White House, but Mike Pence has successfully managed to
keep smiling in the background.
Yeah. He's kept happy with, you know, he's happy smiling face at the background of a lot of these very contentious issues. But Trump has been happy to keep him on board. It's quite obvious, really, because Mike Pence is such an in with the kind of conservative evangelical vote. But there were mumblings, it's funny, in the last few weeks that would Donald Trump pick him as a running mate, etc. Now, it looks like he still will in 2020, but significantly, Donald Trump specifically contradicted Mike Pence's chief of staff. He told reporters travelling with Pence from Doonbeg up here to Dublin that Donald Trump had kind of suggested he stay in the hotel. He hadn't directed it, but he suggested it. So Donald Trump himself was asked about this in the Oval Office and he shot that down. So there are definitely signs of tension between these two men, and that's something maybe to watch in the next few months. So I think that's part of the significance of this story.
Okay, now, the Donald Trump summer, has it been a good summer, bad summer for him?
Not particularly. I mean, it's a real back-to-school feel in Washington. I'm going back early this week myself. And no, it hasn't been good, particularly for Donald Trump. His performance, I think, at Biarritz at the G7 was particularly erratic, even by Donald Trump's standards. You know, he was threatening trade action, in particular against France, changing his stance on China, and his comments towards Denmark and his decision to cancel that trip over Greenland was also seen as very kind of erratic. But I think most concerning for Donald Trump is the economy. Mm-hmm. Few economic headwinds now in the US, mainly down to his own trade policy. I mean, there's very serious stakes here. China and the United States are the two biggest economies in the world, and they're engaged in a trade war, essentially. That's getting more serious by the minute. Now, there are talks that the two sides are going to come back at a more senior level and talk, but this is beginning to affect not only like farmers, we're talking about farmers here, but farmers in America, producers in the Midwest, really are getting affected by these. And the Trump administration has essentially given them a bailout. There was another $16 billion bailout for these farmers recently.
You would have thought that the most important thing for Donald Trump now is to hold off any kind of a recession until after he gets re-elected in 2020. But yet this China trade war could cause a recession.
Yeah, and we might seem step back from the brink and some kind of deal coming now, because you're right, this is something that Donald Trump does worry about. He worries about the stock market. He talks up the economy all the time. And if there is any suggestion that that's beginning to turn, that could be a vulnerability for him next year in the elections. In saying that, there'll be some recent polls that show that maybe in this case, that the economy will not weigh on voters' minds the way it has in previous elections.
Okay.
Because Donald Trump himself is such a divisive figure that he is motivating people to either vote for him or vote against him next year. That, you know, it's all become about Trump now. And even if they have misgivings, say, on the Republican side of the economy, they'll still vote for him because they like what he's doing on the Supreme Court and social issues, and they like their man, and they're going to fight for him.
So Trumpism, And how are the Democrats getting on with their race?
Well, that's entering a new stage this week. So on Thursday, the third Democratic debate, televised debate, is taking place in Texas, and the field is narrowing. There were more than 20 candidates. That's narrowing. Now 10 candidates have qualified, and they will debate on Thursday. Now, other candidates are still in the race, but it's really, you know, minnowing down now to this smaller group. Joe Biden, again, hasn't had a great summer. He's the front runner, but he's still ahead in the polls. This is Joe Biden, the former vice president under Barack Obama. He has a lot of vulnerabilities, number one being his age, and two, his stance on various controversial issues like race and gender in his very long political career. And his supporters, I think, now are worried that these have emerged as major vulnerabilities for him. Now, he's still, there was a poll out in the last 12 hours or so that shows he's ahead, but only at 29% among Democratic voters. So it's not a huge lead. And then, you know, up behind him are Bernie Sanders, who's still there, and Elizabeth Warren. She is definitely the one to watch at the moment. She's a senator from Massachusetts. She made her name by really taking on the banks. She's a Harvard professor who was once a real capitalist and then kind of changed her policy position. And I've been speaking to people in the States who say one of her advantages is that she can communicate with ordinary working class voters. She's got that folksy appeal, grew up in Oklahoma, and it's kind of connecting with people, particularly in the early voting states like Iowa and New Hampshire. She's doing very, very well there. Okay. So at the moment, I think, you know, she's on the up, but again, it's a long way out. Anything could happen in the next few months.
All right, thanks, Suzanne. John Bruton, going back to the start of what Suzanne was saying there about the relationship between Ireland and America now, and then you look at the relationship between Ireland and Britain now. I think Jodie Corcoran was alluding to this today in the Sunday Independent, somebody pointing out that compared to the golden days of when we had this great relationship with America, and then the relationship we had built in recent years with Britain, we're kind of a bit, are we a bit on our own now, like, and we're going to be, we potentially going to be kind of out there on the outskirts of Europe as well.
Yes, and that's not because of anything we have done. It's because of changes in the political climate in the United States and in the United Kingdom. Radical nationalism has gained ground in both of those places. So we're now left depending much more than we would otherwise have done on our relationship with continental Europe and through the European Union. And the European Union solidarity for us is going to be much, much more important in the future, I think, than it has been in the past. Now, the fact that we may not have an ideal relationship with President Trump does not mean that we don't have a good relationship with American business. American business continues to invest heavily in this country and see it as a good proposition. As far as our relationship with Britain is concerned, yes, there's differences around the details of the Brexit negotiation, but the fact is we are condemned to live together because we're in part sharing the same island.
As Mugabe said about the whites in Zimbabwe, we cannot deny the love that exists between us, isn't it? That's pretty much
with the history anyway.
One issue, sorry, just one issue on that. I mean, there are problems with that for Ireland because, for example, even though we are going to be inevitably brought more, you know, into solidarity with Europe, as you say, some of the developments in Europe are not all good for Ireland. Oh, yeah. For example, the clampdown on corporate tax, like, you know, that's going to be an issue that will resurge for us. Greater, you know, a greater federalist Europe, more concentration, more, you know.
I think the truth of the matter is we have succeeded, and I was involved in this myself in the convention, in retaining unanimity on tax matters. And any issue on corporate tax is going to be dealt with through the OECD with American involvement, not just exclusively by the European Union. I think we're going to have to give some ground will be given on this, but it's not going to be dramatic.
But the OECD are changing their position a bit on this as well, talking about minimum corporate tax rates. So it's not that that's going to be an easier path necessarily.
And we keep being told there will be some payback for all this support we're getting from our friends.
I was just going to go back to the point, because you brought up Mugabe again, and not being shocked by what Mike Pence said off AutoCue, because Donald Trump's administration has changed how foreign diplomacy is done there. So instead of the words we heard from our 1983 diplomats was that it was couched with carefulness. Nothing that Donald Trump does with his international partners is couched with carefulness. So that's why we're not
couched
surprised.
With coarseness now, I think is the new mantra. Jim, briefly.
Oh yeah, I just think at a global level, what's happening at the moment is deeply disturbing. I mean, Ireland may be becoming more isolated because of the relationship with Britain and the United States. But if you look at the rise of China, the menace of North Korea, what's happening in the Middle East, what's happening in North Africa, there was never a time, I think, in recent history when the world, the Western world, needed to be more united. And it is becoming more disjointed. Because if you look across Europe, you know, you look at the rise of the right in Italy, in Germany, in Hungary, in Poland, in Austria, Europe is becoming, at a political level, much more fragmented. And then Trump is, you know, creating
but
major
you know what?
Problems.
Emmanuel Macron is going to save us all and bring the whole world together.
Yes.
Okay, listen, John Bruton, you're going to leave us now, so thank you very much, and we'll take a break.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.